On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another brand new edition of the Tall Can Sports Podcast. This, of course, another Grey Cup Week edition of the Tall Can Sports Podcast. Hashtag TCA goes gray. This is an exciting show for us. We'll get to why in just a second. If you want to interact with the show, you can do so at Tall Can Audio on Twitter or head over to facebook.com/tallcanaudio. Give the page a like. And you can interact with us over there with some messages, comments, however you want to do that. If you want to support the show, we would appreciate that. For a minimal contribution, we will provide you with some pretty sweet bonus content as we go along. You can do that at patreon.com/tallcanaudio, and we will have the link to that, like everything else, in the show notes as you listen on your podcast player or at tallcanaudio.com. This is a good one for us. We're excited about this, and we've been wanting to do this for a while. On today's show, AJ Jakubek of TSN 1200. Honestly, when Rob and I sat down and started this show almost 2.5 years ago now, if you can believe it, AJ was one of the very first guys that came to mind in a couple of regards. How we wanted to do the show, and in terms of guests that we would like to have down the road. We'll touch on it a little bit with AJ here in a minute, but in that first sense, there's very few people as knowledgeable as AJ Jakubek on sports in general, not just here in Ottawa, but across the board, in terms of things that he's covered, things that he's called games for. Guy's done football, guy's done hockey at the junior and NHL level, guy has done soccer. I mean, covered the Super Bowl. AJ's done it all, and he does it all with a fairly, well-versed and knowledgeable point of view. And that was somebody that Rob and I both respected a great deal and thought, man, one day, wouldn't it be cool to have AJ on the show? But you bide your time a little bit. When you're first starting out, you don't have the listenership, you don't have the audience for it to be worthwhile. So you don't do it. You kind of build your own audience, you wait until a good opportunity. And what better opportunity for a guy who knows the CFL as well as AJ does than Grey Cup Week? And so we reached out to AJ, and right away he said, yeah, be happy to do the show. And so we really appreciate it. The other reason that we wanted to kind of, and I don't want to blow smoke, you guys who've been listening for a while understand how this show is going to go, but one of the things that we really dug about AJ is that he doesn't suffer fools lightly. Guy knows his stuff, and when it's appropriate, he's certainly polite and respectful and all these sorts of things. But if you're going to say something stupid, he's going to tell you. And if you've listened to this show for a while, you know that's kind of the way we are as well. So we got a lot of respect for that. And we were super excited when AJ agreed to come on the show here during our Grey Cup week coverage. And so, you know, we're about to present that to you. This show, like all our shows this week, is presented by Need a Beer Co. You can visit them at Need a Beer. That's N-I-T-A and then B-E-E-R for those of you who don't know how to spell beer. Needabeer.com if you want to visit them. Follow them on Twitter and Instagram at Need a Beer Co. Hit them up on Facebook. You can just search Need a Beer Co. and that'll come up for you. They are the presenting sponsor of all of our TCA Goes Grey shows this week during the Grey Cup week buildup that we've been doing. Really excited to have them on board. If you missed it earlier, we had Andy, who is the founder of Need a Beer, on the show on an episode of Audio Whiplash. Definitely suggest you go back and check that out. I believe it's Audio Whiplash number 96. You can find that on your podcast feed or at tallcanaudio.com. We had a great time talking to him about the brewery, about the craft beer industry, these sorts of things. So thank you once again to Need a Beer for being our presenting sponsor this week. And with no further ado, myself and Rob sit down and talk to AJ Jakubek. That right now. As promised, we have AJ Jakubek of TSN 1200 on the line with us. How are you doing tonight, AJ?
Excellent, guys. How are you guys doing? It's Grey Cup week. How could you not be bad?
Yeah, exactly. Things are pretty good over here. This has been this is a thrill for us. When we set this up a couple of years ago, you were one of the first names we had on the list of guys we wanted to hunt out when we were ready. Right when things had hit a certain point, given your background, given your wide variety of sports that you're able to cover. And I think I speak for both Rob and myself when I say, you know, we've always enjoyed your take. So thank you very much for doing this. I know this is a busy week for you. We appreciate the time.
Hey, my pleasure. If you ever want a job as my agent, now I know where to call.
Oh, we haven't even got through all of it, AJ, really, because we're Ottawa listeners. And guys, but the listenership is quite a bit beyond this region. So for those of our listeners who aren't in the region, perhaps you could give them a little background on you.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Edmonton and basically wanted to be a pro athlete. And at 5'10" with not the most amount of talent, realized that I better find something else to do if I want to be involved in sports. So dabbled a little bit in coaching, but always had a desire to do broadcasting. I mean, even when I was playing Bantam and Midget AAA hockey, I was kind of looking ahead to, okay, I'd really like to be a broadcaster one day and work in sports. So yeah, took the 2-year program at Nade in Edmonton and made sure I did play-by-play there and kind of worked my way throughout the West, Melfort, Saskatchewan, Trail BC, Kelowna, Edmonton, and then got probably my big break coming to Ottawa in 2003, doing Ottawa 67's broadcast, and then went back to Edmonton, did the Oil Kings broadcast there for junior, and then back to Ottawa in 2010, and basically have done everything from Sens play-by-play and pre- and post-game to Ottawa Fury play-by-play, Ottawa Redblacks play-by-play, Ottawa 67s play-by-play, hosting shows. So it's been anything and everything, and it really has been a terrific journey for me. So loving what I do, and you live for weeks like this with Grey Cup in your home city.
Well, and I think, first of all, I think you're selling yourself short as an athlete. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you're a bit of a speed merchant, am I right?
Well, not anymore. In the heyday, I wasn't terribly slow, but no, not those days are long gone. The thing about one of the things, and I've learned this just not only through my own experiences, but you watch, for example, how scout junior hockey, like not only junior hockey, but when they're scouting players to bring into junior hockey, and one of the things they look for is this guy tapped out in terms of, you know, how big is he going to be, right?
Yeah.
They look at the parents, they look at, you know, just the body type and all that sort of thing, because you try and you can only project so much. You can't project that a guy might grow another 8 or 10 inches or whatever, but there's certain people that kind of max out in terms of how big they are at an early age. And that was me. I was 5'9" in grade 7 and I'm 5'10" right now. Okay. So,
it's cruel.
It was just one of those kids. That's why I was a good athlete back then, is because quite frankly, I was fully developed
right.
by grade 7, grade 8. I could grow a full beard. I went to Europe on a school trip in grade 9 and I grew a full beard. 18 years old is the legal drinking age.
I was going to say.
In Alberta, and let's put it this way, I didn't really need fake ID. Okay. I just went into the beer store and picked up what I needed and picked up what my buddies needed. And so I was a popular guy from that standpoint. So you kind of learn, even from my own experiences, just what you can understand why scouts look for a certain body type and what they're looking for, because, hey, they have to deal with the same thing too. When you're scouting 15-year-old hockey players, you have to kind of know, okay, is this all we're going to see? Is this basically what we're going to see at 15 and at 19? Or is this, you know, just the tip of the iceberg where he isn't even fully developed? So I appreciate a lot more what scouts at that level have to do just to try and find players to try and project out to what players are going to be, because it's not just about what they're doing now. You're projecting to what they're going to be in the future.
Yeah, absolutely true. I was wondering if, and I'm going a little off the map here in terms of what we had written down, which a little early for that. Normally I wait a lot longer to veer off trail, but we'll just do that. What does this type of week look like for you as a CFL guy? No doubt as a junior hockey guy, you've done some Memorial Cups, things like that. But what is the Grey Cup week, especially when it's in here in Ottawa where you're based? What does the week look like for you? I'm sure it would have been a little busier had the Red Blacks gotten through, but, you know, what are you looking at doing this week here around town?
Yeah, I mean, it's busy. It's a good busy. I mean, I went to Grey Cup 3 years ago just on my own, and, I had a lot of fun. I mean,
sure, yeah.
Grey Cup week can be a lot of fun.
No doubt.
Go back the next 2 years and your team's in it, and all of a sudden, okay, well, you got to pace yourself a little bit more because – I mean, the parties, they're a lot of fun. I mean, you go, I remember in 2014, I didn't have work duties, and I'd had a late night out on the Friday, and I decided, you know what, Saturday, I'm just going to take it easy Saturday. I'm not going to have any beverages. And then all of a sudden, you walk into the Red Blacks party, and it was on at Joey Berard, kind of by the waterfront in Vancouver. And it was wall-to-wall people, and you've got Henry Burris in there, and you've got, you know, all the owners in there, and Marcel Desjardins and Rick Campbell, and every fifth person is offering you a drink. And so it's like, okay, you know what, maybe I'll have one. And
yeah.
And so on and so forth. But it's a lot of fun from that perspective, just because there's so many different events that – you can go to as a fan. I mean, never mind as a broadcaster, but just, you know, all the different team parties, you know, the R Nation party this week, I think is going to be fantastic. You look at just, you know, the luncheons and it's not just about, I mean, you don't have to be someone that likes to go out and have a beverage or two. There's so many different events you can go to just to get to know, rub shoulders with the CFL. It's a very inclusive league. And one of the big differences having attended a Super Bowl is if you want to kind of rub shoulders with, let's say, the Michael Irvins of the world or some of the players, I mean, a lot of these parties you got to pay $100 to get into. And yes, there's ticketed events here, but the R Nation party, for example, is $10. Spirit of Edmonton party, which has always been one of the best ones, is free every year. So it's good that way, just because you get an opportunity to rub shoulders with, you know, the commissioner or with general managers and coaches or with players or ex-players or fans or whoever. And that's why I love Grey Cup week so much. So, but back to the original question, I mean, it's, you know, go to a couple of the practices and hosting a few shows Friday afternoon as Radio Row for us, where, you know, they bring kind of a cavalcade of guests throughout. I mean, there's stations from all across the country there, and they basically ask you, okay, do you want Manny Arsenault between 3 and 4? And you say, okay, yes. And then, you know, they find a way to slot him in and, you know, bring him to all the different stations that want him, and so on and so forth. Saturday, we broadcast live from the party, which is always a blast, and try and just get a feel of what the party angle is all about, because that's what Grey Cup week to me is all about. The game is fantastic, obviously, but it's the people across the country that go to Grey Cup year after year. I mean, there's people that have been to 40, 50, 60 Grey Cups.
Oh my goodness.
and they just keep coming year after year. And so that's what makes this event so special. So yeah, a few shows Sunday, we do a kind of a pre-game show as well. So a lot of different things, but it's not too strenuous. I can't be complaining too much about what I do. It is a fantastic week, and it's definitely one of my favorites of the year.
Well, and I think that's why we're so appreciative of your time here, because it is a busy time, right? And doubling back to your Grey Cup party experience in Vancouver, I get it. I'm horrible at pacing myself. And as we all know, the impromptu party is usually the best party. So in terms of, I'm gonna take tonight off.
Almost never.
Yeah, not exactly. It never works out that way.
We're still waiting on the creation of the invite to Podcast Row. I think that's got to be what's up next. But for you, these are the two you mentioned. So we're gonna be recording from a few different parties this weekend. Around the city, are you? Would those be the two you're recommending? The R Nation and the Spirit of Edmonton party?
Yeah, I mean, I think those would be my favorites. I mean, the R Nation party the last 3 years, and in particular the last two with the team in the Grey Cup was crazy. I mean, you think back to last year, Jack Astor's in Toronto, just wall to wall people, and Stephen Harper was there, and Damon Allen was there, and Kelly Wiltshire was there, and you see the cheer team and the dance team walk through, and you see various players come through. I mean, I know Sir Vincent Rogers, who wasn't playing, went there last year, and Antoine Pruneau was there last year. Even though he was playing, just wanted to kind of soak in Grey Cup week was all about. And, you know, I know Marcel Desjardins was there, and all the fans, Lumberjoes, whatever. I mean, it was the place to be, really, two Grey Cups in a row. It was wall-to-wall people, and it was fantastic. So now this year it's different because, A, it's 3 days, so you don't have to worry.
I don't know if I got it in me, AJ.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Grey Cup,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
But, you know, so you've got that. But the host team, I think that's where their fans are going to gravitate to. So I would think, and the beauty of Lansdowne is, I mean, you know, you got Ryderville that's going to be at the Horticulture Building, and you've got other team parties that are going to be around some of the other venues there. And you know, every night there's going to be, for example, I think Sloan's playing on Friday night at TD Place Arena, and then Saturday it's Trooper and April Wine. So, you know, you don't have to just go to the R Nation party and stay there all night. You might be able to catch two or three different spots, and the same goes for downtown. Like, and not all the events are going to be at Lansdowne. So Spirit of Edmonton is going to be at Sen's House, and that to me is a can't miss every year. You've got to find a way to get there at least once through the weekend if you plan on taking in some Grey Cup festivities.
Right.
And then, like, I know Hamilton's got a pub crawl going, and, you know, all sorts of different things.
It's always classy with the Hammer.
Yeah, exactly.
and you know what? So to me, that's an interesting point, and I was most interested. We have some heavy listenership in Alberta, right? And you have the competing Stampeder and Eskimo fan base, and it's really established, right? And what they do with Ryderville. I was wondering what your take is more on Hamilton not having a set thing, or even Montreal with their, I think they're doing a 3-hour window. Maybe it's a matinee. I'm not entirely sure. What does that say about those two franchises?
Yeah, you know what? Well, Ottawa's done the 3-hour party the last 2 years, and it was fantastic, right?
Okay.
So I don't think you need something every day. Ryderville, I mean, they cut it down from 3 days to 2 days. They're now just Friday and Saturday night. It used to be Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Spirit of Edmonton isn't even really through the Edmonton Eskimos. It's kind of separate, but it's got such a great tradition now that, and they've got their Spirit of Edmonton breakfast, which is sold out again, which is one of those things that eventually one of these years I'm going to get to because everyone says it's kind of a Grey Cup bucket list thing to do.
I can't be doing three nights of parties and then hitting someone's breakfast. That's not going to work. I need a brunch at best.
I think one of these years you got to decide you got to suck it up and go to the Spirit of Edmonton breakfast. And trust me, I am not a morning person, but right. That's certainly one of those things 1 year. Maybe next year when it's in Edmonton, I'll find a way to get it done. But it's not happening for me this year because of other duties and events. But nonetheless, I think, you know, like Calgary's got their pancake breakfast and everyone does their own little thing and it all works. And the beauty of Grey Cup too is just because there might be more Argos and Stampeders fans here, or Red Blacks and Riders fans, you're going to see fans of all teams. You might see fans, like for example, 2 years ago, I met some fans of the Baltimore Stallions.
Wow.
That basically come up every year for Grey Cup.
Unreal.
Because they fell in love with the CFL.
Still holding it.
They had their team there. You'll see the Northwest Territories Polar Bears. You'll see.
We're interested in the Atlantic
expansion jerseys. They're Canadians.
Yeah.
But I've seen people wearing Shreveport Pirates and Las Vegas Posse jerseys.
Wow.
And speaking of the Argos, I know everyone's kind of concerned. Oh, well, you know, the party would have been so much better if Saskatchewan was in it than Toronto. Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. A lot of the hardcores from Saskatchewan are still going to be there.
They'll be there.
And Toronto, surprisingly enough, the last few Grey Cups, yeah, okay, they don't have a lot of casual fans there. There's no doubt. And that's where they really need to improve.
Right.
But I've met a lot of hardcores. A lot more than I expected the last three Grey Cups. So I think we'll see some Argo hardcores for sure make the trip east for the weekend.
Well, I think we're looking forward to, I think we're both interested in checking out the Atlantic Schooners party that, you know, is apparently going to go on here downtown. That's one that they're calling it a Down East kitchen party. That's intriguing to me.
Well, and I've never been to that one, but I think it's certainly intriguing from the standpoint that it actually seems like there's a legitimate chance that we could get a 10th team. I don't know how far along this group at Halifax is, but certainly further along than we've seen in a long time. And that would be terrific for, especially for the area, for not just Halifax, but all of Atlantic Canada to have a team to call their own. But I think for the CFL as well, to get that 10th team and to be a truly coast-to-coast league would
sure,
be
yeah.
Fantastic for the Canadian Football League if they can somehow find a way to get it done.
So before we sort of touch on the actual game itself, it's such a perfect opportunity while we have you on the line to maybe touch on the Red-Black season. So for me, as somebody who went to six games, I bet, for me it felt like it never really got off or got on the run that the fans hoped it would. I'm sure the team hoped it would. Can you pinpoint why you think that was?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It was a frustrating season. It was wildly entertaining because
for sure.
Almost every game went down to the wire. I had this debate with somebody on Twitter. Oh, it wasn't wildly entertaining. They lost too many games. Well, almost every one of their games went down to the last 2 minutes. So I don't know how you could say it was frustrating.
Sure.
That's what I said. It was wildly entertaining and frustrating.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, exactly what it was from a Red Black standpoint. So, I think a lot of different things came into play. Certainly, they lost maybe a few too many veterans from last year's team. There was a lot of turnover, and that's going to happen, right? I mean, in a league where you've got a lot of one-year contracts now and you don't have the option year like they had in the past, it makes it difficult to re-sign all your free agents, especially coming off a championship team, because those are the types of players that seem to be more coveted than the ones that might play on a 2-16 team, for example.
Right.
So that certainly hurt from an Ottawa standpoint, and you know, just the switch at quarterback. I mean, Henry Burris, for me, you know, statistically, probably pretty similar to what we've seen from Trevor Harris the last couple of years of both quarterbacks. But, you know, the one stat that still means more than anything as a quarterback is wins and losses. And I think Henry Burris knows how to win, and Trevor Harris is still kind of finding his way into that. And maybe that's part of the reason they lost so many close games. And, yeah, they found a way to win some down the stretch. But I think Henry Burris kind of got criticized in some spots for his tweets about leadership through the season. But I don't think he was wrong. And I don't think he was directing it directly at Trevor Harris.
Sure.
But, you know, when you're the starting quarterback, there are certain things that you need to do beyond just your role as a quarterback. And, you know, I think that's something that Trevor Harris needs to improve on going forward. I think he could be as good a quarterback as there is in this league. I think he's got that potential to be the best quarterback in the league. But, you know, much like when you're the captain of a hockey team, when things aren't going well, you've got to face the music. And I think Trevor Harris needs to do a better job of that going forward. And I think he vows to. I think he certainly has the drive to be very successful, but you know, that's one area where he needs improvement. And when you make that change, and then you've got so much turnover, for example, on defense, where at times you started six rookies
very young.
The defensive side of the ball, then you're talking about a team in transition and a team that doesn't have that same type of winning experience that maybe the Red Blacks did from the previous two seasons.
Did you find it curious that they made that decision? And I assume from my perspective that it was a conscious decision to sort of go younger in a year that they were hosting the Grey Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if in the end they wanted to go that way,
right,
or if it just happened that way. I mean, but, you know, that's the reality. And some of the free agent signings didn't work out. I mean, Khalil Bass didn't work out. A.J. Jefferson didn't work out. Kenny Shaw, unfortunately, barely played because of injury. So some different things forced that along as well. But in hindsight, I wonder if maybe rather than bringing in some of those free agents from elsewhere, had they spent a little bit more to retain some of the free agents that they had, maybe things would have been a little bit different. But in the end, a learning experience for everyone. I do think Marcel Desjardins and Rick Campbell are the right guys to get this team back to where it needs to be, and we'll see what their plans are for next season.
Well, and injuries can't be discounted either when you talk about Sir Vincent, John Gott, Sinopoli, Gavins, Harris, Tate, just in terms of, it seemed to be, I know football is a game where injuries do happen, and that's got to be an accepted part of the system. But, man, that seems to be a lot of, and they happen sort of intermittently, where you're just always behind it.
Yeah, no question. They suffered key injuries at bad times, too. I think Brad Sinopoli and Jarrell Gavins were two crippling injuries at the end of the season. Sinopoli, just such a reliable receiver for that group, and having already lost Kenny Shaw and Josh Stangby at the time was out as well. It was probably just one injury too much for that group. And then same with on the defensive side of the ball, you had such a young secondary and some good young players there, most notably Sherrod Baltimore. But you lose when you were starting after the injury of Jarrell Gavins, three first-year players and two second-year players alongside Antoine Pruno amongst the six secondary positions, because Sam linebacker is basically a DB position. Again, that's just probably one injury too many at a key position to a veteran. So no question, but other teams had to deal with big injuries too. I mean, and that may be why a team like Winnipeg faltered down the stretch as well. I mean, you lose Jamal Westerman, your best pass rusher and a Canadian to boot, Matt Nichols wasn't playing at 100%. You lose your best receiver in Darvin Adams. You lose your best playmaking defensive player in Mo Leggett. And Andrew Harris got knocked out of one game with a concussion. So that was probably one injury too many for them as well. But, you know, other teams, Saskatchewan, Edmonton, dealt with injuries all season long. And, you know, I don't think Ottawa can use that as an excuse. I just think, you know, as a whole, they just weren't consistent enough all season long, whether they were healthy or banged up.
And I know Matt's chomping at the bit here, but I just had one more. I just had one more question. As you ran through that, as a season ticket holder, I could not be more impressed with, and I'm interested in your take on a guy like Antoine Pruneau.
Yeah, I mean, Pruneau's he's a guy that lays it all out in the field every game. There's no question about it, and he's got terrific closing speed. He's just got he's just a competitor that's got a nose for the football. So we've seen him go through some ups and downs last year, switching from Sam linebacker to safety and getting benched in the process after they got torched against Montreal, and he had a rough game against Nick Lewis, but took that as a motivating experience and a learning experience, and switched positions, and he's never looked back at safety. So I still think we haven't seen the best of Antoine Pruneau in that position, but he's a football junkie. He wants to learn, wants to get better, and I think he's going to continue to be a very strong player for this Ottawa team.
I wanted to ask you, before we get into this particular matchup this weekend, what your thoughts are on the last several seasons now, as the Red Blacks have, well, I can't say returned, but journeyed into the league. This is a city that's had a mixed, at best, I guess, history with the CFL. If you go a long way back, it was a pretty healthy franchise, but then there was the most recent Rough Riders and then the Renegades, and you know, things didn't pan out so well. Is it as simple as better ownership, more connected, you know, being able to run it through kind of an already pre-existing organization that Jeff Hunt had with the 67s? Or what is it that you have thought they've done well that has allowed them to really engage with this city on a level that maybe previous ownership groups didn't do? Because I think historically, or you know, certainly in the last couple of incarnations, it hasn't run all that smoothly. And I don't know if they could have done it any better coming back this time.
Yeah, they've certainly captured the spirit of what people wanted and envisioned football to be, and professional football to be here in Ottawa. I mean, growing up in Edmonton, I don't ever remember any good Ottawa football teams. It made the transition to being the Ottawa football play-by-play man very easy for me, because there was never any animosity towards Ottawa football. You always kind of felt sorry for them, right? Because they had bad teams, they had bad ownership groups, and they were just never any good. And then they lost their team, and then they get their team back, and then they lose the team again. And you know, I moved here in 03, so I got to experience about 2.5 years of the Ottawa Renegades. And I remember going to a game. Everyone wants to blame the Gleibermans, but I remember prior to the last Grey Cup being here in 2004, sitting on the south side with my dad, who was in town, and there's no scoreboard for anyone on the south side.
It was terrible.
You couldn't see the clock, couldn't see a scoreboard.
Oh, you couldn't hear through the speakers.
So at the end of the game, all of a sudden, you knew they were down by less than a touchdown, and all of a sudden, Kerry Joseph, and you knew it was late in the fourth quarter, but all of a sudden, Kerry Joseph throws up a Hail Mary. It's incomplete, and it's game over, and it's like, okay, I guess the game's over. Like, it was ridiculous to not have, and it's not like they were saying there's 10 seconds left or anything like that. And so, I mean, they totally cheaped out the Waters group, and I remember stories of the ownership group basically wondering, well, why do we have a practice roster? Why do we have a third-string quarterback? And all these stupid questions where they're chintzing on things that are definitely necessary. So, I mean, people can blame the Gleibermans for the failure, for sure, but the reality is that group failed long before that. And if the Gleibermans didn't step up and keep the team here for one more year, it would have been dead anyways.
Right.
So it would have been just dead a year earlier. So I think the Gleibermans certainly put the final nail in the coffin, but in the end, it was doomed before that. So poor ownership groups, bad teams, a dilapidated stadium. You look at the ownership now, but you look at the stadium now, and the teams that Ottawa's had, reaching the Grey Cup twice and home playoff games 3 years in a row, and just everything that is Lansdowne with all the different places you can go for a bite to eat or a beverage before or after the game. And it's a completely different sporting experience than what it was before. So, and then they got the R Nation thing bang on. People wanted the R. And, you know, I think it took a while for the Red Blacks name to feel normal. But now no one even thinks twice about it, right? It's the Red Blacks. Sure. It's R Nation. They got their black and white and red. And they got their R on the helmet. And you look around town and you see how many people are wearing Red Blacks gear. I mean, it looks good. And people like wearing it. It's cool to wear Red Blacks gear around town. And we're going to see a ton of that this week. So, yeah, they found a way to make that work. You know, I think some of it is genius for sure. And some of it is probably a little bit of luck. But, you know, they certainly found a way to touch not just the hardcore football fan, but the casual fan to make this an event worth going to each and every week.
So were you surprised, sorry, Rob, but just after how badly they'd been burned, the football fan here in Ottawa, by the Renegades and you know, those late years with the Rough Riders, were you surprised that when it came back so strong? I wondered a little bit as, you know, I grew up just outside Toronto. I was an Argos fan, and once I moved up here, I kind of made the conscious decision. I wanted to embrace this team. I wanted to see it work. And from launch, I was all in. Were you surprised that the ticket sales were so strong? Did it have a little bit of that Winnipeg returning, or the Jets returning to Winnipeg, and the novelty might wear off? Like, has any of this caught you off guard, or did this always seem like a CFL town to you?
I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. I thought it was going to be better than it was before, just based on ownership, based on the stadium. And if they found a way to get a good football team, then I figured that was going to help as well. And they managed to get all three of those done. So, but to be honest, I had no idea what to expect long term, if they were going to get 24,000 a game. And so it's probably slightly exceeded my expectations, but I don't want to say I'm stunned, because I knew there was a great football tradition here in Ottawa, and
yeah.
It was a football town before it was a hockey town, because the NHL only came here in 1992, and this was always an Ottawa Rough Riders town first. So I think, you know, and that's a generation ago,
sure.
But still, when you've got people that had been through that, it was just a matter of finding that kind of younger demographic, and that's where they really nailed it, was getting that younger demographic involved. And that's where the CFL is, you know, a lot of teams around the league are looking at what Ottawa's doing, because that's the demographic that they want to be a part of their product.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then you've got these people coming to games for a long, long time.
Well, and you know what? For me, I was also a Renegade season ticket holder on the South Side. And it would be half full some nights. That's in those same years. I was in Calgary for business, and I took in an Argos Stampeders game, and McMahon was packed, which is fine. But what really struck me was, as you've just touched on, young people between the age of sort of 15 and 30, and it's young guys with their kickoff rituals, and it was all that stuff, and it was that generation that Ottawa football was missing. There was this diehard older, you know, those who remember Jeff Avery in his prime, right? Those groups, but they were missing that younger sort of base. Whereas, you know, that's what really amazed me about seeing that was just how the youth was engaged, or younger crowd out west.
Yeah, for sure. Although they're struggling with that too. I mean, I've seen that in Edmonton and Calgary and other places where, you know, they're struggling to turn some of those 20 something fans that are National Football League fans into CFL fans. And that's something that's a challenge, I think, across the country. So I'm not sure anyone's done it better than Ottawa, even Saskatchewan, but you know, Saskatchewan's a different animal altogether because they're clearly the number one team in that province. But even Saskatchewan, you go to their games and the demographic is probably a little bit older. Now they're selling out as well, so you're not too concerned about it. But I would say Ottawa's got the youngest demographic in the league, which to me really bodes well for the future if they can find a way to keep this going.
So tell me something. Outside of those in the know, do you think the casual fan is giving the Argos the respect they deserve?
That's a good question. You mean like in Toronto?
No, I mean here in town. I mean league-wide. Do they look at Toronto as a team that beat Ottawa out by 1 point in a softer East division, and they look and go, okay, that they're going to be cannon fodder for the Stamps?
Yeah, I mean, all I know is this: the last two Grey Cups where you had a mismatch in records and it included the Calgary Stampeders, both those games went down to the last seconds, one in overtime and one in Hamilton that was determined basically by a block in the back from Tank Reed in that game that prevented a Brandon Banks touchdown from really winning Hamilton that game at 9-9 against a 15-3 Stampeders team. So the other thing about Toronto is they've got probably the best coach in the game in Mark Trestman and one of the best quarterbacks in the game in Ricky Ray. So I think, you know, when you've got Trestman, when you've got Ray, when you've got a front four that includes Sean Lemon and Cleon Lang and Victor Butler, I think it's hard to say, you know what, you got to count out Toronto. I'm picking Calgary to win, but I think it's going to be a close game. And I think it's going to be a game that's determined by a touchdown or less. So I think we're in for another great game here on Sunday.
What do you expect to be, if you could give us just one matchup that would be interesting to watch, whether it's somebody's running game against the defense, whether it's, you know, one receiver versus a secondary? What will you be looking for in this game, in this particular Grey Cup?
I think probably the front four of Toronto, if they can get to Bo Levi Mitchell. If they can get to Bo Levi Mitchell, much like they did to the Saskatchewan quarterbacks, then we could really have a game. I mean, Calgary's O-line is one of the best in the league, so that certainly is going to be a daunting matchup for them. But that's where they could really do some damage and change this football game. And I know earlier in this year when Toronto was here, I mean, that front four was as lethal as any in the league. Victor Butler had some injury problems, but it looks like he's healthy and good to go now. So I think from that perspective, that's the one matchup I'll be watching maybe more than any.
I'd like to see if that front four can get in the Calgary backfield and make life uncomfortable for Bo Levi. That wouldn't be a bad thing, I don't think.
So we're going to ask AJ to hang around after we wrap this up and give us his prediction that we will play with all the rest of our friends of the show later on this week on our preview show. But in the meantime, I can't tell you how much, AJ, we appreciate you giving up some time this week. We know it's a busy week for you, but this is a big week for the CFL, and between Rob and myself, you know, we couldn't think of somebody that we were more excited to have on and talk about it with us. So we really appreciate your time.
Hey, appreciate it. No, great to be with you guys. And
maybe we'll see you around at some of these parties.
Well, I was going to say, if you happen to see me at one of these parties this week, make sure you come say hi and give me a cheers, and we'll enjoy a beer together.
Yeah, well, we'll be collecting a different type of maybe a little less professional audio at those parties. So if we see you around, maybe we can do something there. So thank you
Perfect.
So much.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
for your
AJ.
Time.
All right, cheers, guys.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at tallcanaudio.